Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. Happy Sunday. This is the 22nd of November. We're getting ready. Everybody's getting ready for Turkey Day. Welcome to the show. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and this is Man of the Month, and we have a Man of the Month this month, Mr. McClinton Karma Stanley, who has been doing some outstanding work in our community, films, video, cinematography, just oodles and stuff, so I can't wait to bring him onto the show. But first, let's get started with some of the other things that we need to get out of the way. So let me just give you an idea of some of the other shows that we have at here at the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We have, on the first Sunday of the month, we have a show called On Track with Henrietta Bird coming out of Chicago, Illinois. And she keeps us on track and keeps us in touch with our goals and looks at what we're needed to do to stay on track. The second Sunday of the month, and this is every month and all the Sunday shows are at 8 p.m., the second Sunday is Let's Celebrate with Shakesha Showers out of Compton, California. And she brings to you Let's Celebrate. And it's about celebrating life, celebrating accomplishments and what people are up to. And she's got a special show, a section of the show that she talks to, brings in any kind of youth energy and some performances. She's a storyteller and a comedian herself, and she likes to make sure that there's lots of entertainment. On the third week, we have Clara Lyons Devon out of Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and her show is called Vision Works, and that's a show to really people with vision, like our guest tonight, people who have vision, and we talk about what they're up to and what they're doing, and so those are the things. Those are the things that that we're working on. The fourth Sunday is Man of the Month, as usual. That is me. I'm the guest host. I'm the host of that particular show. And in addition to that, on the fifth Sunday, when there is a fifth Sunday, we have a gentleman by the name of John Thomas, and he is he brings to us a different flavor, but he actually talks about the distinctions of the International Black Summit. So those are the things that are, those are the five Sunday shows, and on the second and fourth Tuesday of the month, I have a show called The Wealth Club, and the intention of The Wealth Club is really to talk about investments, financial intelligence, and to really give us some insight and some ideas of how to grow your business, how to make money, how to keep your money, and how to invest it in various things that are available. Let me first do the declaration of the International Black Summit. This was we're here in out of the umbrella conversation of the declaration, and so let me read you the declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7, 1991. November 22, 2009. Above and below, north, south, east, and west. We begin with a moment of silence. Thank you. Now, without any further ado, I'm bringing to you a gentleman that I am very excited to have met and just excited to have on the show. Again, his name is McClinton Karma Stanley, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be on your show. It's an honor and a privilege.
The honor and pleasure is mine. I've looked over your vast amount of work, and I'm in awe of where to even begin. but I certainly want to actually let's start with Take No Prisoners.
Oh, okay.
Tell us a little bit about what and what was your perspective in terms of coming up with this great film?
Okay, Take No Prisoners is an urban drama, and it's been in the making for about 6-7 years, and I started off as a film that I thought I can do really quickly and get it out there and start on the film that I really wanted to do, but that didn't happen that way, and I put more time in it for reasons of production value and to make it the best that I can make it. So it took a little more time, and dealing with since I was the producer of the film and had to find money to raise and that whole process. So it took a little bit longer than I expected. But this is a film. It's about the urban experience, and it's about choices. And the story starts off with three young men find themselves in a situation where they have to make a choice. They vowed to be friends from childhood, but due to life, like Melvin Van Peebles say, life don't bring greenback stamps. So,
That's right. You know,
life throws a curve You know, sometimes you're ahead of it, sometimes you miss it. So there were three young men who had to make a decision about their lives, and the ones who made the bad decision had suffered bad consequences. And the one that was saved from that was nurtured and moved through with people that was surrounded him and gave him good advice and showed him the way out of the negative situation he's about to embark on in his life. So it's a film that has a lot of different kind of the age group. I have it as an urban movie, and most urban movies you only think about young folks being urban, but, you know, our urban experience has transcended, you know, we have all kind of people that live in an urban situation, the young, the old, and I made a community story out of it. And it's
Now, the interesting thing that I thought was that this was filmed in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And it plays out in the Brooklyn Projects.
Yes. Actually, the story is about three young men that grows up in the projects.
Yeah. And you talk about their relationships, you talk about their commitment, and you really also underline the like you said, the consequences. You know, because this film is about behavior and consequences associated with it.
Yes, it is. And it's an anti-violent movie, although it has violence in it. But we see how violence has sprung up in the community. It's against guns. We have guns in it. We see how a drive-by shooting kills a child in the street, an innocent innocent victim. We have a community rally, and we have a community activism in it, and we had positive role models and negative role models. You know, role models could be positive or negative.
True.
You know,
true.
And
true.
And the consequences of those people are that gives you advice. We have one college student in it, and the rest of one. It's three kids. It's three young men. They aren't kids. They're young men. One is a drug dealer. One is a booster. And the other is a college student. The college student finds this ring. He wants to be a photojournalist. He finds this diamond ring, and his drug dealer friend wanted to take him to his man to sell it. But really, he's trying to recruit people to work the street for him.
To work the streets with him, yes, yes, yes.
And he introduced him to his man and to Kingpin, and Kingpin offered him to work with him, and he refused him. And you see where his partner gets very angry with him, and it really ticks off Kingpin. So it puts him and his friends at odds at the very beginning, and it never really solves the problem. Is never really solved. It really escalates because he finally recruits his booster friend to work with him because his booster friend finds out that his girlfriend is pregnant.
He wants to do
the right thing by taking care of his his girlfriend and the baby on the way. So he thinks he can make some quick cash by hitting the streets.
Right.
And that's a bad decision.
Gotcha.
Bad decision, and it winds up getting him killed.
Now there's also some conversation or information around voting and what the history of voting has been in our community as
sure.
well.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I have the scene that the college person in the movie. His name is Raz, and he has a girlfriend named Cynthia.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a activist, a young community worker activist. And they have an organization that they call themselves the X-Squad. And the X-Squad
right,
goes
right.
around the community getting people to register and vote. And they've been part of this system for a while, and there's been struggles and up and downs. And when there's a hit in the street, the Roz is looking for Keo, and to apologize for the outburst and the disrespect he did to Kingpin. But instead of him finding Keo, he runs into a drive-by shooting which Keo is involved with.
Gotcha.
And a kid is killed, and he witnessed it, and he takes pictures of it.
Right.
So the word gets on the street that he has pictures of the hit, and Kingpin corrals his boy Keo to get the pictures. So
right.
Keo sends people over to his house to steal the pictures, but give him strict orders: do not hurt him. But in the process of his mother's there, and a gun goes to his mother's head, and the mother has a bad heart, and she has a heart attack.
Wow! So you've got some real intricate plots going on that are definitely real and coming from the street.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That people can relate to and can see the struggles that exist in terms of being related to each other, and holding out this commitment to support each other from,
sure.
from a younger men. So
yeah.
And
his girlfriend convinced him when his mother has a heart attack, this makes him have a change of heart. And his girlfriend talks to him about, you know, something has to be done. We have to become proactive in the community. We have to get a rally together and organize people around issues. And she encouraged him to do that, and he does. And it changes his life. And they have a rally scene where they have the rally. And after the rally, he's all excited about the people who registered to vote, who came and joined the X-Squad for community service work and, you know, so forth. And she's on the phone with this Minister Samuels, and she began to look sad. And he's being rejuvenated by the excitement of the event. And she's looking sad, and he asks her what's wrong, and she tells him that we should really be thankful for all the work and hard stuff that we've gone through over the years. We finally made a breakthrough. And he asks her, what has been keeping you motivated all these years? And she tells him the story. She says, my father, think about the story my father told me when I was a young girl. Mm-hmm. He grew up in South Carolina, where black folks wasn't able to vote until the 60s. And he saw his father, his grandfather, and his great-grandfather vote for the very first time in his life. And his father his grandfather cry like a baby. And that encouraged him so much, he joined SNCC and went south to help set up registration, help people get to registrate to vote all over the South. And she told that story, and it kind of changed his life, because he understands that he's the next generation that the torch is being passed to.
Right.
So they formed this coalition, and they vowed to fight the crime in the community. So that really puts him at odds with his partner. Meanwhile,
and Kingpin, right?
Kingpin.
Yeah.
Oh, especially Kingpin. After he sends the thugs to steal the to get these pictures and stuff from his boy Raz, his mother having a heart attack. Their relationship get very, very strained. And meanwhile, doing that, Kingpin rewards him these drugs, and he takes them home and hides them. And his mother, who is a crack addict.
A junkie, right.
Finds out, searches place and finds the drugs and starts using them and replacing them with dummies. So he gives the dummies to, he don't know this, he don't supposed
right.
to know this, but he gives
right,
the dummies
right, right.
That his mother has repackaged to his boy to deliver, and it gets him killed because they wind up being a package of dummies.
Wow. Well, I don't want you to give the whole
It's a really, really twist at the end.
Okay.
A really great twist at the end, and you find that the Roz's mother, who's a born again Christian,
goodness.
Is a praying woman, and
she
keeps him totally in prayer.
Boy, that's amazing. Now I'm going to back up a little bit and. What is it, because some of our listeners out there may be thinking about you creating their own films and
mm-hmm.
so forth, and especially an urban, urban film like yourself, because you actually won the best urban feature film at the New York International Independent Film and Video Festival, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes,
yeah.
It did. It won the best urban drama, yeah.
So
yeah.
What what goes into actually, you know, the inspiration. You talked a little bit about putting the money together to get it going. What is it like to produce a black film?
First of all, it takes a lot of, you know, making movies is a lot of hard work, and my experience has been with a lot of great filmmakers, and that's how I have learned. I started off with Ozzie Davis, and my first movie was with Ozzie Davis. We went to Nigeria to do this movie called Kongi Harvest, and that was in 1970, and I went with as an apprentice director. And and from there, I've worked with people like Melvin Van Peeble, Ernie Dickerson, people in Ola Balogun in Nigeria, Peter Ego in Nigeria. I worked
Spike
a lot
Lee.
Of international thing, and I knew how to make the movie. But the thing is raising the money.
Okay.
And I knew that sometimes I just think too much that everyone knows what I know and they can do it like I can do it, but you can't. And I've gone through 3 or 4 different career stages in my development as a filmmaker, as an editor, as a cameraman, and as a director, and as a producer, and as a writer. And all of these disciplines is a career study itself.
Sure.
You
well,
know,
awesome.
And I was very fortunate because this has been my passion, and this is all I ever did and all I ever wanted to do in my life is to work on films and to make movies. I chose not to go to Hollywood because I didn't want to get caught into that Hollywood co-opted kind of situation where, you know, you make money, but you don't, you know, you may not like the stuff that you're doing. And
right,
I always
right.
wanted to be a little more independent.
And control your work. Yeah, go ahead, Jakesha.
Yes. Wanted just to let you know, you have 2 more callers. You're speaking with caller 718-469.
Correct.
And you have another caller, 347, with their hand up.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Jakesha. This is International Black Summit Talk Show Network. This is Man of the Month, and we are featuring Mr. McClinton Karma Stanley, an accomplished filmmaker with 30 years' experience in films, video, TV. He's worked with Spike Lee, Ozzie Davis, Melvin Van Peebles, Lindsay Barrett.
Barrett.
And so we're having a conversation about what it takes to create a film. I'd like to also talk a little bit about some of your work, because you've done some work in television, some television dramas. You've done some documentaries. You've done some TV shows, cable TV shows. You know, where do you get the inspiration?
I'm kind of project orientated because I'm about doing as much stuff as I can and as being as diverse as I possibly can because the message is in all the mediums, you know, and it's. I like to stay busy.
Okay.
And I like
okay.
to stay busy. And I, you know, I look for work and I don't let the movie or the documentary or commercials or promos. I do it. It's my passion. So, you know, I do it all and try to learn and try to always reinvent myself in each medium that I am, you know, that I pursue.
Okay. Okay. Very good. And now what do you do to, you know, to do any meditation? Do you do praying? What do you do to kind of recharge your battery and to give you like inspiration, direction, or an idea for the next piece.
It's prayer. You know, I grew up in the church. I grew up in Baptist church, Southern Baptist,
okay.
And you know, my great grandmother was a praying woman, and I think her prayers are still being answered in my life. And I still pray, it's the type of people you surround yourself with. It's key.
Yeah.
It's also key. And, I try to surround myself with positive people and people who's about accomplishing something in their life and leaving something for the next generation.
Oh, excellent, excellent. You know, that's clearly one of the themes and the intention of the International Black Summit is it's about having positive influences and positive images that you can inspire and kind of keep moving forward with your dreams and goals. That's great.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Diggers. And now Diggers was made in 1985.
Yeah.
And it was about the Panama Canal.
Yeah. It won the Golden Eagle Award of that year. That's the documentary outside of the Academy Award. Is one of the most prestigious document you can be awarded, and the producer of that is Roman Fawcett. I was associate producer, editor, and a cameraman on it. And,
wow!
I spent a little time in Panama, which I loved and really appreciated. And it took about 5 years to do that. We ran out of money, and it was done on grant money, and PBS supported it also with money. And,
okay.
And it's about the unsung heroes of the Panama Canal. And when I always saw the documentaries on the Panama Canal, you black folks would never really mention.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little sidebar.
Okay.
But when we did that documentary, most of the men in the documentary was in their 80s and 90s, was in their 80s and 90s of age.
Okay.
And about four of them died before we finished it.
Wow.
So we did one, we interviewed one guy, one old guy, and he even cried on tape saying that finally his story is being told. And all the hardship and everything that they went to and to build the canal and never got any recognition for the work, which the canal is known as one of the wonders of the world.
Sure, sure.
You know? And the way they built it and went cut down a mountain and went through a mountain, man, is unbelievable. It's unbelievable the work that these guys did and the dangers in the life that was lost by these black workers. And it was a very segregated time, and the white workers who was engineers and heavy equipment workers, they made they got paid in gold and the black workers got paid in silver.
Gotcha. Now a lot of these workers were from the West Indies,
oh,
right?
All of them, most of them were. They were from all of the West Indies, from Jamaica. Jamaica was the center of recruitment, not with the English, but with the French, when the French started.
Okay.
And the French, what they call, failed, and they left a lot of people stranded. So, in Panama.
Okay.
So, when the Americans took up the plight of the canal, Jamaica wouldn't let them recruit there, so they had to go to Barbados, and they recruited people. All the West Indies had to come through Barbados to get to the canal.
Interesting.
And people from all over the Caribbean worked the canal.
Gotcha. Wow. Well, Liz, I'm glad that you're doing the work that you're doing. I'm a little history buff, so I definitely am going to have to go back and dig that up and dig up Diggers, right?
Yeah, and Diggers. And I've had a chance to work on a lot of people. Like the first film that I produce myself is a movie called To Live Again. It's a small documentary. And
right.
I made that in Nigeria after the Biafran War.
Okay.
And going to Nigeria to shoot Congi Harvest, to work with Arvie Davis on Congi Harvest, I met this gentleman, who's from Jamaica, who's a writer and a poet and a novelist and a filmmaker. He's a very talented young man. And he became my mentor, too. His name was Lindsay Barrett. And during the war, he was the director of information out of the war zone. So I met him doing the shoot on Congi Harvest. And when that was over, I wasn't ready to come back to the States. And he says, I have this project, man, and would you be interested in doing it? So I bought a 16mm camera with me when I went, because I knew the possibilities of going to Africa for my first time, not having a movie camera would be devastated.
Sure.
For me. I took film and I had film there and then, you know, at the process of Congi Harvest was happening, I was wondering what project will I start. So he was a perfect person and he took us to the East, and we were the first foreign journalists to go into the East after the war to document it. And that came up with a piece called To Live Again.
To Live Again. Okay.
Yeah, it's about the Igbo people struggled for unity after the war.
After the war.
Yeah.
Now, you also did a piece, When We Were Kings.
Oh, yeah. Basically, I worked on that as a cameraman, and the early days on it, I did some assistant editing with it. But basically, I, as a camera person, and this was in Zaire, and it was in 74.
Okay.
When Muhammad Ali fought Frazier. I mean, not
yeah,
Frazier,
I,
Foreman.
Foreman.
Sorry, Foreman
in
Zaire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
And I was there for that and for the fight. And we documented that whole event, you know,
yeah.
From, we had cameras all over the place. I was very fortunate, and I've been very fortunate in my film career to work on projects of that magnitude and with that kind of historical significance.
Yeah, that's awesome. What was that the expression you used to say, Ali Kumbaye?
Yeah, Ali Kumbaye, yeah.
And
that was an experience. That was an experience, and Ali made believers out of everyone there, because even his own camp didn't think that he was going to win. I mean, to tell you the truth about the matter, everybody had a lot of whisper under voice, because I used to walk by the gym. We used to shoot Foreman in the gym, and the way he was hitting that bag, you can hear it on the out before you got in the gym. I said, whoa, you know. So in Ali camp, his trainer was, get off the ropes, Ali, get off the ropes. But Ali was getting his strategy together.
That's right.
You know, that's when
right.
He created the rope-a-dope. And
right.
And I was there to witness that. And it was a fabulous thing, man. It was unbelievable.
Wow, yeah.
Really
yeah.
Good.
That's a beautiful thing. Now, you also did some work called Bone Bristle.
Yeah, Bone Bristle is a documentary, and
okay.
It's a documentary about the spoken word movement. And this documentary was done with the was pre Russell Simmons Deaf Poetry Jam.
Okay.
And
okay.
I was involved with George Bruce, Deborah Pointer, and Danny Simmons, and we got a proposal together and a budget together. And I shot the performances all over the place and put a piece together and presented it to Russell, and that's how Death Poetry was found. But Bone Bristle, it's about the poetry movement, the spoken word movement. And I have some of the noted spoken word artists of the day in it. So, and it talks about what is spoken word and the commercialism of it and how would that change the art form being commercialized.
Gotcha. Wow, that's great. This is an International Black Summit Talk Show Network. This is the Man of the Month, and we are featuring Mr. McClinton, Karma Stanley, and just talking with him about some of his 30 years of experience in the film, video, TV industry, and we're discussing some of the things that he's done in the past. And you've done some videos as well. In fact, you did the video Sarah.
Yeah, it was a music video. It was done by a song by a guy, an African artist, Soweto Soleil. He's from the Ivory Coast, and I did that, and it won the best music video at the Gabon music video at the music festival in Gabon, and that was a string of videos that I did, and I did a couple of others for him, but that won a really, really big award there in Gabon. And before then, the first music video that I really did myself was a video with a group called Guy, and people may remember the song My Fantasy by Guy, mm-hmm. and the video. And I produced that video and directed and wrote that, and and that was up for the best music video of the year, and I think it was 89, 88. And the only thing that it beat out, Michael Jackson beat it out, one of his music videos at the time. So, I feel good.
That's right. To be able to beat out the King of Pop, I tell you,
that's right.
It's definitely noteworthy. Yeah.
That's the way it goes, man. So that was a really, really good video, and I really enjoyed making that because we did that down in the Bahamas.
Excellent, excellent. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we've got just a fascinating gentleman with us tonight, Mr. McClinton Karma Stanley. I see a couple hands up. I'm going to get to you in a couple minutes. Just got a couple more things I want to go through before I get to you. So I'm not ignoring you. I'll get to you momentarily. Now, Moment of Truth. That was a TV drama?
Yeah, that was a TV drama, and we shot that was shot in Nigeria. I went to Nigeria doing Festac, and I took two movies and To Live Again was shown, and it won honorable mention. And I took another movie there. It was called In the Streets of Harlem, which I made at the New Lafayette Theater.
The New Lafayette? Okay, I'm familiar with that. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I made that through the New Lafayette Theater, and it was represented in Festac.
You also did some, was it Money Matters?
Oh, yeah, The Moment of Truth. The Moment of Truth was a drama. So I did a tour. I was going over the country showing my film.
Uh-huh.
And I went up north, the place called Sokoto. And they asked me when I was up north, could I stay and work on there? The country was doing their first television drama festival, and this was their first one. And they asked me, would I come in and work as an artist, a freelance artist with them on their drama? And I said, yeah. So the drama won the best drama award of the festival. So they found out that when they started writing up the articles and talking about it, they found out this black American was up there working on this movie, and they tried to take the award from them, from the TV station. So that, yeah, because I wasn't a Nigerian, you know, but they wouldn't let him do it. So it caused controversy, and it gave me notoriety in a way, and that led to me being like one of the first people to direct a major commercial in Nigeria.
Wow. You know, it's amazing. One of the things that they always say is that sometimes a person has to leave this country and do their work outside to really get recognized back in this country, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And musicians had to go through that, and you know, that's always been in the 30s and the 40s and even in the 50s and even up into the 60s. You know, musicians had to go to Europe and France in particular to become recognized as a legitimate artist.
Right. All right, hold on a second. We're going to take a couple of callers.
Okay.
We've got, go ahead, Jerry. You're on the phone. On the show live.
How you doing, brother?
I'm good.
What a great work you keep on doing, impact our community and stuff like that. Let me ask you a question. Did Quincy Jones have to go to Europe because how the United States was segregated to enhance his composer? Is that true?
Yeah, you know, it's been a history of that, you know. Musicians leaving the country basically had to be, you know, a lot of musicians did that, and a few visual artists, sculptors and painters, and writers, James Baldwin, and I mean, he lived in Europe, and a lot of artists, you know, goes to Europe and at that time. It may not be like that now, so much now, and it is, because you see what rap music has done to the world. And still, you know, sometimes the artist has to go out the country to be recognized as a legitimate artist.
But you know what? I think, brother, a lot more black people, we need to tell our story back in what happened, because a lot of us don't really don't know what the black musician or the movie producer have to really go through in the past, because, like I said, back then we wasn't really recognized. They considered us as second class citizens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even Melvin Van Peeble had to go to Europe to be recognized as a filmmaker.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that we need to tell that story so this generation could really really understand, you know, what shoes they really step on, because a lot of them, as I talk to, they don't really know.
No, they don't.
I think that story needs to be told. Even Nina Simone had to go to Europe to really make her music known before the United States, they come back to the States to really recognize her. So that's all I said. Just keep up the good work, and that's all I have to say. Everybody, y'all have a good night.
Hey, brother, support independent black filmmakers, man. That's what we have to do
to keep us
here and to make what we do viable to the community. We got to be supported. And thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
Hey, no, wherever it's black, welcome black people globally, I'm with you. Just keep up the good work.
Fine, thank you.
All right, yeah, have a good night.
You too, thank you.
Well, thanks, Jerry. So tell me a little bit, how can we support the independent filmmakers? What kind of events do we need to go to? Maybe here in New York or nationally, because we've got listeners in California, New Jersey, Chicago. How can we support the filmmakers, the independent filmmakers?
Okay, you know something. It's hard to really pinpoint, because the truth of the matter is that we don't control our art.
Mm.
And everything that we do have to go through someone else's hands to get to the people we want to talk to, or we want to relate to, we have the message to. And these people here stands at the gate to tell you what your people needs and what your people want, because they have conditioned them to that point. They are conditioned to get to you know, for instance, when I finished my the movie Take No Prisoners, the title of it was Ungodly Counsel. So I did all of my publicity and all of my stuff, and I got this distributor, and he called me back about a month or so down the road and says, listen, we're having trouble with our marketing people about how we're going to market this. I said, it was clear how I'm going to market it. No, see, they don't want you to be involved in the market. They want to market because that's their expertise.
Okay.
So they claim. So I could bust my head around, and I said, okay, we go with Take No Prisoners, which was the original title when I first wrote the movie.
Okay.
And they said, yeah, we like that. So they got the title, and they sent me the artwork for the cover. I almost flipped.
Really?
Oh,
really?
Man.
It was negative?
They got this young kid on the cover with this gun in his hand, looking menacing, and it wasn't. it wasn't. And then I went to the street with it. I asked, if you saw this in the thing, I asked these young kids. I said, if you see this in the in Blockbusters or on the shelf, would you buy? Would you get it? Would you see it? Oh yeah, I look at everything. Somebody got a gun in their hand.
Wow.
I said, well, I'm trying to take the gun out of our hands. And they're trying to keep the gun in our hands.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that the International Black Summit is really, you know, one of our scopes is to really impact the image that we have of ourselves and the image that we're portrayed in the media, because you know, it's amazing that you would have gotten that response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything with a gun in it, I would want to look at it, buy it, or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
and the bottom line, that's what that's how they're selling video games too.
Yeah, because they are conditioning them to want that. You know, and they said, well, this won't sell, that won't sell. This is America. They sell rocks.
That's like, what do you call it, pet rocks?
It's sell rocks, man. Come on. If you can sell a rock, you can sell anything.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
You know, you can market that, and you can market, and you know, and they and then the next thing, they want to know who's in it. You know, you can't do a movie just with talented people anymore. You gotta have a star. You gotta have at least a B actor or a C actor who's been on TV or on TV sitcoms or something. And forget about an A actor, because at this point I could never afford an A actor in the stuff that I do, because I don't write that way.
Right.
You know, I'm not the blockbuster kind of filmmaker.
You're talking about consciousness and talking about
history,
conversations and impacting the community positively. Yeah,
sure.
Well, I hear what you're saying.
Sure,
yeah.
And they tell me that that's not sellable, but I'm not going to let them discourage me with this urban kind of drama, the thing that they want to keep us in, because our stories in the urban experience, it's about everybody. It's about everyone. It's not about the drug dealer.
No.
You know, he's in it, but it ain't about him. How about this working cat who's busting his chops every morning and working two and three jobs to keep his family together.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
Or a single mother who worked her all her life and sent her. She got two or three kids that she sent to college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the heroes, man. It ain't though. You know, it's not these million-dollar ball players or super movie stars that they put up in for us to glorify. That's not really that's not really a hero.
No. No, I know exactly what you mean, because that's one of the things that I love about what my sister is taking on. You know, she's a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got three kids, and she's holding it down and making it happen. And those are, you know, like you said, those are the heroes, the unsung heroes in our community that don't get the kudos for producing the results that they produce. You're absolutely right.
We got teachers that kick, you know, is barely making it. I mean, you know, they, what do they have to do to make a decent living?
Right.
And they would arm with children minds each and every day. That's the quality of the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now I know we can talk about some of the social issues for the next couple of hours.
Sure.
I want to find out from you. So what are you working on for the future? What are your next thoughts, ideas, and I also want to talk a little bit about, we've got about 8 minutes left.
Okay.
Actually about five or six minutes left.
Wow, time went by fast, man.
It did go by fast.
Oh, so, when you're having fun?
That's right. Absolutely. And here's the thing, we're talking about something that is impactful to our community, that, you know, we're talking about imagery, we're talking about what people see, how people see themselves. I mean, the fact that we're now in film, we've got an opportunity and obligation to present ourselves positively, and clearly that's what you're up to. So what are you working on?
Okay, I'm working on a couple of things here. One, I'm working on what I call my DV production workshop. I came into the industry, there weren't a lot of colleges and universities that offer film courses and stuff.
Okay.
And most black people my age had to go through some sort of workshop.
Okay.
And workshop was very timely at the time. And that's how I got involved. I got involved through NET Workshop and Community Film Workshop. And that's what I want to revive again, the workshop attitude, the workshop mentality, the production workshop mentality. So I'm building up a workshop and which I will be performing at several locations. The most recent one is training people in commercial work. I'm doing that at the Black Spectrum Theater, and that's going to start next year. And in February at the Guaya Center, I'm going to have a production workshop that deals with the basics of learning production from script to finished piece.
Okay. Okay.
And
so you're basically taking on like a school to train people and really just recreate yourself with, I mean, 30 years experience. You've got a lot to show people and teach folks. Now, how can they get a hold of you? Give us some information so that our listeners would know how to contact you.
Okay, you can contact me through takenoprisonersthemovie.com. It's takenoprisonersthemovie.com. You can contact me through that website, or you can email me at karmastone. At AOL.com, and that's spelled KORNASTONZ at AOL.com.
So that's Cornerstone.
It's Karma Stone.
Okay.
Yeah, Karma Stone. That's KARMASTONZ at AOL.com.
Excellent. Now, just got a couple minutes left.
Okay.
video. You mentioned to me something about video blogging. I didn't even know that that existed. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about what that is and what that entails?
Video blogging is just like radio blogging, but you do it with the image, and it's not usually a half an hour or an hour show. It is usually, you know, eight to, you know, the longest you want to do it is 8 minutes, and it's just like putting your stuff on a YouTube and stuff like that. And I'm very much into the internet and YouTube and video blogging because that's the next wave of information, and it goes all around the world. And you can promote yourself. You know, that's how I promoted Take No Prisoners, through YouTube. And you can see my trailer on YouTube, Take No Prisoners YouTube, R.H. Bless. And you can see the trailer that I have there. But video blogging is like commentary, short news bursts, how to do stuff, and it's it keeps the community it's just like being on television, it's just on your computer. And it's like the radio blogging, but it's a shorter format.
Well, I can tell you that the Talk Show Network team, the team of folks that produce the International Black Summer Talk Show Network,
yes,
we're definitely going to be coming to you to maybe collaborate and do some things to support us in becoming a little bit bigger and voicing some of the things that we've got to share. So
I'm looking forward to that. I really am, and I really would love to partner with you guys.
Well, thank you. This is McClinton, Karma, Stanley. Thank you so much for being on the show. It has been just wonderful having you. We didn't even cover all this report and some of the other works that you've done.
Yeah.
So many.
Yeah, and just you realize when you start talking about it how much it is. I mean, went by so fast. It's unbelievable. I had fun. Thank you very much. I really appreciate this time and your effort and this exposure.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. This is Man of the Month. We're featured Mr. Clinton, Karma, Stanley. For sharing some of his work and some of his thoughts and some of his future projects with us. We come to you live every Sunday at 8 p.m. We've got also shows on Tuesday evening as well. The second and fourth Tuesday, we have Wealth Club. That starts at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, 6:30 p.m., and all the shows on Sunday. The first show, of course, is On Track with Henrietta Byrd. The second Sunday is Let's Celebrate with Shakaysha Flowers. She was on the show a little earlier, giving me directions. And Let's Celebrate, that's her show, the second Sunday. And the third Sunday, Vision Works, and the fourth is Man of the Month. My name is Glenn Greenwich. I'm part of a facilitator for the International Black Summit. We have an annual event coming to you live this August, 2010, next August, and that's going to be in Baltimore, Maryland. This is going to be the first stateside annual event in 2 years, so please go to the website, www.blacksummit.org. And make sure that you get the information. You don't want to miss it. We were in Anguilla last year. This summer we were in London, England. And so next year we're going to be stateside, as I said, in Baltimore, Maryland. So certainly take a look at the website, get the information, and be there. We're about having a positive consciousness around the planet and certainly in our community. Let's see, one of the things that I'm going to leave us with, I'm stealing it from one of my favorite DJs, Mr. Frankie Crocker, and he always ended his shows with, "For all of you, I hope that you live to be 100 and me 100 minus a day, so that I never know that good people like you have passed away. This is Glenn Greenidge signing out. Thank you for listening. Please visit our website, www.blacksummit.org, for more information. We love you. Peace and blessings. Good night.
This is it.